This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. We're so excited to introduce you to Great Jones. Great Jones makes high-quality, thoughtfully designed cookware that's so stunning you won't want to put it away. They have everything from Dutch ovens to ceramic dishes to non-stick sheet pans. They've got everything you want. I have the Saucy, which is a terrific saucepan. It has curved sides. It has a pouring spout. It has a lid. And it looks so elegant. It's really a pleasure just to look at it on the counter, even before we're using it.
Yes, I love all the colors.
Yeah.
They make stunning gifts that are actually useful. Weddings, housewarming parties, birthdays. It's the perfect gift for the foodie in your life. So upgrade your kitchen and replace those old rusted hand-me-downs with bold, beautiful, long-lasting pieces from Great Jones. Get started today at greatjones.com and get an extra 15% off your first order with promo code HAPPIER. That's greatjones.com, promo code HAPPIER. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast about how to build strategies and tips to build happier habits into your everyday life. This week, we'll talk about why you should write it down. So obvious, so true. And how an obliger-obliger couple can create outer accountability for each other. I'm Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in Los Angeles. And with me is my sister, Gretchen Rubin, in New York City, who is my favorite happiness bully.
That's me, Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. And Elizabeth, we swapped up the intros to get everyone in the mood for the upcoming April Fool's Day. That is a holiday that we've always enjoyed as a family, so we decided to play an extremely minor April Fool's trick.
Yes. Happy April Fool's Day.
Yes, plan a trick to play on your friends and family. It's very fun to do a little April Fool's Day confusion.
Now, Gretchen, you just had a big anniversary. Your blog is now 12 years old.
Yes, my gosh, it's hard to believe. Yes. As of March 27th, my blog has been going for 12 years. It has changed a lot over time. We have come a long way. But yes, it's been a huge engine of happiness for me. In fact, if anybody wants to hear about how I got the idea to start writing the blog, I write about that in my book, The Happiness Project. Also, I did, for the 10th anniversary, which I cannot believe already is 2 years ago, I did this ebook called The Best of the Happiness Project Blog, 10 Years of Happiness, Good Habits, and More. And so if you want to read sort of highlights from the blog, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. It's hard to believe it's been 12 years. It's crazy.
I mean, I remember being in Kansas City and you telling me about this blog you were going to start about your happiness project. And I didn't know if I even knew what a blog was. I mean, it's so crazy. It feels so much longer than 12 years in some way. It feels like I can't imagine Gretchen Rubin life before blog. It's hard to remember.
Well, that's the way it is with so many things. It feels like it's been very brief. And then also like since the dawn of time, it's weird how things are like that. But so, Elizabeth, this week our Tread This at Home tip, I think we have to say this one comes from the Department of the Obvious, but it's something that's worth really shining a spotlight on because it really works and you really regret it if you do not follow this Tread This Home, which is write it down. If you have an important thought, write it down.
Yes. If you care to remember something, put it down on a piece of paper, a phone, somewhere. Write it down.
Yeah. And don't delay. Write it down right away. And Elizabeth, this happened in kind of a super meta way, even with this idea of the Try This at Home, because you and I were talking in a separate conversation just amongst ourselves. And we mentioned like, oh, gosh, if you want to remember something, write it down. And I was like, that's a really great Try This at Home. And I wrote it down. And then later on, you know, later in the day, I was like, well, Elizabeth had that really good Try This at Home. What was it? I can't remember. What did she say? And at the time, it seemed like such a great idea. I thought, I'll never forget it. But I did. But fortunately, I had written it down. I had to fish a piece of paper out of the trash. And I will post.
Oh my God.
I will post a picture of that piece of paper that, and all it says is just like write it down in very. It doesn't have any kind of. It's just sort of floating on the page, but that was enough. That's all I needed. When I looked at that, I was like, oh, right, that is the idea that I wanted to remember. So I was so grateful that I'd written it down, because otherwise I would have been kicking myself that you'd come up with a good idea. Yes. And it had been lost.
That is very meta, Gretch. I got to try this at home inside a try this at home inside a try this at home.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, and it seems like such a paradox. It seems like something that's so big or important, it can't be forgotten, but then it's forgotten.
Yes.
A lot of times, like, I'll do something in my life, and I go, well, that's a happiness demerit. I'll have to share that on the next episode. No way I could possibly forget this big gaffe. And then you'll say, what's your happiness demerit this week? And I will be blank. And I'm like, wait, I did something horrible. And how could I have forgotten what it is? And now I really try to email myself. I mean, about anything. I mean, this happens to Sarah and me all the time with ideas for, you know, scripts. Like, we'll be walking to get coffee and we'll say, oh, hey, what about if, you know, this happens in Act Two? We'll go, oh, yeah, that's good. Okay, let's work on that when we get back. We'll walk back into our office and we're like, what were we talking about?
Right.
Well, didn't we have some idea? Wait, what was it? I mean, it happens on a daily basis. The good thing is now if we're in our office, at least we know to just write it on our whiteboard. So we have, as I've discussed, whiteboards all over our office, and there's so many things scribbled down on them that seem totally nonsensical out of context, that makes sense to us. Because now we know, just if we have an idea about anything, write it down.
Right, right. Yeah, it's good to always remember how easy it is to forget. Never say, this is too big to be forgotten, because it isn't. Everything can be forgotten. I mean, and, you know, the thing is, develop a system and stick to it. I mean, you can use paper, you can use your phone, you can have a little notebook, you can send yourself a voice memo. You can write it on a whiteboard, but you kind of need to have something everywhere you are. Like if you're going for a run, how are you going to write down something that you want to remember? If you're in your car, I will email myself something often because I check my email so regularly. I know that it will kind of enter my consciousness again. Or I have this little notebook, this little perfect notebook that I always, always carry in my backpack. And if it's a kind of note that's just too hard to type in it would be easier to write it down. I'll do that. And then I always know to check my notebook and make sure that I've sort of integrated anything that I've noted down.
I think this is something a lot of musicians notebooks by their bed or recorders, because you hear about a lot of musicians waking up in the middle of the night from a dream with a song in their head.
Oh.
And then just sort of singing it into their phone so that they'll have it in the morning.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. Well, I think there's sort of two kinds of things that we want to remember, two principal things. One is something to do, like don't forget to do this task. And the other is creativity, like what you and Sarah or the musicians face, which is I don't want to forget this idea. And so I think that both ideas really need to be preserved. They're both really important. They're both frustrating if they're lost, because then you're either having to do more work to come up with more creative ideas, or you've made your life more complicated because you've forgotten to do some important task.
Yeah, and of course, part of this is you have to know to see what you've written down.
Yes.
Like you said, the email is good because you're going to be looking at your email, so you'll see that you emailed yourself.
Yeah.
But what you don't want to do, and I've done this before, definitely, is write stuff down, but then have no idea where I wrote it or that I wrote it. You know,
or reading our own handwriting
in the ether. Yes, that is an issue for me.
And for me, too. We both have such bad handwriting. You're like, well, this is clearly important enough that I felt like I had to write it down, and I have no idea what it is. Oh, my gosh. But there is no worse feeling when something goes wrong and you're like, you know what? This actually floated through my mind. This happened to me in the terrifying episode of Eleanor's Passport, which I talk about at length in episode 31, if anybody wants to hear about that. But basically, Eleanor's passport had expired, and the night before we were going to fly, I realized it. And the thing that really made everything so much worse is weeks before, I had had the thought, wow, you know, I think Eleanor's passport might be ready to expire. I had better go check that right away. Totally lost, never thought about it again until the night before. And so, but if I had written a note like check passport, then this whole kind of crazy last minute
frenzy that we had to go through and change the plans and stuff, I would have avoided if I had just simply written down that one thing. But it floated through my mind and I never thought about it again.
Oof. By the way, Gretchen, for those of us who do fail sometimes to write things down, because no matter how much I say I'm going to write down everything, there still will be times when I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I find that if I walk into the room where I had the idea, I'll think of it. Like a lot of times, maybe I'll have an idea when I'm making my coffee in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So if I walk over to the coffee pot and just stand there, it'll come back to me what it was that I was, you know, thinking I should write down. Try that.
You worry for me, or like I had a thought when I was in my email and then somehow I got distracted. You retrace your mental steps to wherever you were. It is amazing how that works. And I remember, I mean, speaking of the challenge of keeping things written down, I remember when I was doing the research onto the life of John F. Kennedy that I was doing to write my book, 40 Ways to Look at JFK. Mm. One of the things that his mother, Rose Kennedy, did was she would pin notes to her dress as reminders when she had tasks to do. She had 9 children and a lot going on, a very busy life, so she had these things.
Oh my gosh.
And I've always wished that I could see a photograph of what that looks like, of her pinning notes to her dress. That's a system. You know,
it sounds like Memento, you know, the movie Memento.
Yes.
I couldn't remember. He had post-it notes all over.
Yes. And tattoos. Yes. Yes. Well, let us know if you do try this and if writing things down works for you. And what is the method that works best for you? Because I think, Elizabeth, this idea of whiteboards is something that maybe would appeal to people who don't necessarily have whiteboards as part of their life. But it's just like it's just such an easy way to scribble something down and then get rid of it as soon as you're done. So let us know how it works for you. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, drop us an email at podcast@GretchenRubin.com. Or as always, go to the show notes for this episode, happiercast.com/162 for everything related to this episode.
Coming up, we've got what I would categorize as a whimsical happiness hack. But first, this break. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase.
Yes, Elizabeth, we've talked about, you know, introducing a note of whimsy, and this is a hack that is just pure whimsy. There's not much to this hack, but I think it's fun, right?
I love it.
So this is an article on time.com, and it is about find out what your name would be if you were born today. And in the show notes, we'll have a link to this article so you can go in and enter your own information and your own name. And what it does is it figures out if you were born today or different years, what would your name have been?
So it uses the popularity rankings of names over time to tell you what your name would be now, or if you want to go back to 1800 and see what your name would have been then.
Yeah.
It's just, it's really fun.
It's just funny to see. So listen, if you were named today, your name would be Grace. Because when you were born, Elizabeth was the 19th most popular girl's name. And so today your name would be Grace. That's a great name.
Yeah, I love the name Grace.
And in 1980, your name would have been Julie. In 1950, Bonnie. In 1930.
Well, not as much of a fan of Bonnie.
In 1930, Rose,
oh,
which is coming back.
That's
and
nice.
1890, Myrtle.
Oh, wow. Myrtle was the 19th most popular name in 1890. That's interesting.
There you go.
Okay, now, Gretchen, when you were born, your name was not as popular as mine. Mm-hmm. Yours was the 288th most popular girl's name.
Mm-hmm.
And today, your name would be Araya, A-R-I-A-H.
Yeah, that's an unusual name.
Is that how we pronounce it?
Araya. That's see how I have
Araya.
It there. Araya.
Oh, that's pretty. In 1980, your name would have been Marjorie. In 1950, your name would have been Arlene. In 1920, now this is an interesting one, it would have been Floy, F-L-O-Y.
That's a name I've never heard.
Never heard that, not one time.
Yep.
And in 1890, your name would have been Imogene.
I kind of like Imogene.
Yeah, Imogene is cool.
Well, you know what, this reminds me of something that I've noticed, a mistake that I've noticed, and for some reason I notice it a lot in young adult novels, but a person will be writing a book about characters that's set today or like within the last 10 years, but they've picked all the wrong names. Like they're trying to pick like, well, what are really popular names? But they reach for the names that were popular like when they were in middle school. And it's like, there's no one named Jennifer today. It's a name that people who are children now are not named Jennifer, even though other times that's one of the most popular names. So I think sometimes people get that, they kind of get the vibe of a story wrong because they're not really doing the research to be like, well, if I was going to pick some really popular girls' names, it wouldn't have been the ones that were popular when I was in fifth grade or whatever. Have you noticed that?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's funny you mention this because something Sarah and I always do with every character is we figure out what year we think they were born, and then we look up most popular boy, girl names from that year. And we won't pick the top five usually, but, you know, we'll go through, like, the list of the 100 most popular names of, you know, 1968.
Uh-huh.
And we'll pick one lower down on the list. But we absolutely do that with everything we write. We do that.
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, this was just fun. You and I just got a kind of a kick out of it.
Yes.
It's just random, basically useless information, unless you're like writing a TV script, in which case it's extremely important. But if you're curious, I will post a link to it and you can look up and see what all the corresponding names would be. It's fun.
Yeah.
And now for the four tendencies tip. Now, if you don't know about the four tendencies, which is whether you're an upholder, a questioner, an obliger, or a rebel, you can take the quiz, the free quiz, at happiercast.com/quiz. More than 1.3 million people have taken this free quiz, so you can do it. But this is a tip for people who already know what's going on with the tendencies, a very interesting tip that we got from our listener, Sammy.
Yes. She says that she and her husband are both obligers. And as we've discussed, obligers often don't make good accountability partners for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I'm an obliger. To remind everyone, obligers readily meet outer expectations, but they struggle to meet inner expectations. And your sweetheart often counts as inner. So you sort of see that person like yourself, not as an outside influence. So these two obligers came up with a good system for them as a couple. Sammy explains, our goals were to eat at home more and take better charge of our budget. So we decided to take turns being in charge. For eating at home more, we have head chef. It's one person's job to make dinner every night, and that alternates daily. You're in charge of making sure the groceries are there for your night, either by shopping before you come home or putting the groceries on the list when you know the other person might be shopping. If you want to go out to eat, we have to plan it in advance, or we can do it spontaneously if the person not in charge of the cooking that night suggests it. We've only eaten out a handful of times in the past 2 months, which is a huge progress from at least 3 times a week before we started the system. And then in terms of taking better charge of their budget, We have a daily CFO, Chief Financial Officer. This alternates based on the calendar date. I'm even, he's odd. This has been so revolutionary as well. It's the CFO's job to be the main decision maker for all financial decisions, check our account, and input all purchases into our budget spreadsheet. It sounds like a big job, but none of it takes very long. The biggest part of it is being the decision maker for the day. If it's my day to be CFO, it's my husband's responsibility to run all purchases by me. For example, he's at the grocery store and thinks we need a new blender. As CFO, I think about our budget and say yes or no. Before this system, neither of us were in charge and both of us were in charge. It was chaos. Anyway, basically, we take turns being in charge and hold the other person accountable. It feels so sustainable, and I can't believe how easy of a switch it was. This is genius. I mean, my gosh.
This is a really, really good way, because this is something that many, many obligers talk about. Is they're like, I'm an obliger married to an obliger. And I have to say, many of the happiest marriages that I personally know of are two obligers married to each other. But there is this problem that they kind of will be like, oh, sure, go ahead, or yeah, let's eat out. You know, they don't make good accountability partners for each other. And it seems to me that maybe what's working here is there's a role. And when you're in that
job,
and when you're in that job, it's like that's almost like it's taking you out of yourself. And you're like, I have to be accountable to this role. And we've agreed that it's going to be good for both of us if I live up to this role. And therefore, if I don't live up to this role, the whole system's going to fall apart that we're both depending on. So I need to do my part, because if I don't do my part, you won't do your part. And that's not good for you. And it's not good for me. So I have to live up to it.
Yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. You're like, okay, I'm head chef. What does a head chef do? A head chef cooks. Oh,
yeah.
Therefore, I must cook.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What does a CFO do? They make good financial decisions. Therefore, I must make good decisions. I mean, I think that is so much how obligers think. It's just you label something like that, and then you're like, well, I must meet this expectation.
Yes.
Like, the world is, you know, watching.
Right, right, right.
So I think this is so smart.
Yeah, yeah. And they both agreed to it. It would only work if both people were like, this is a system that we buy into, because if one person doesn't buy in, it needs the reinforcement of the taking turns and the holding each other accountable. So I think this is a brilliant solution for a very common problem. And what I love about it, too, is I am often so struck by the imagination and the ingenuity shown by obligers and how they can find outer accountability in situations where, like, I just wouldn't have occurred to me. And, like, this is something I wouldn't have seen the power of it. But then, like you say, once you say, like, oh, it's a role that you're accountable to, you see how you could use this very easily in a lot of situations if this is the kind of thing that works for you. So I think, well done. Brilliant.
Yes. And also, it sounds fun.
Yes,
I mean, I have to say, it sounds like it's almost like a game.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So it's kind of just adding a fun element to life, too. And
yeah,
making these things, which can be very mundane and a drag, like elevating them.
Yes. Yes.
And making them kind of special and fun. So I think this is wonderful.
And another thing is that obligers often do get exploited and taken advantage of. That is something that happens to obligers. This is very, very clearly fair. It's divided up to be in a way that's very clearly fair, and obligers shouldn't have to shoulder more than their burdens, their fair share of the burdens. And so this is good too, because it makes sure that everything's fair and that it doesn't like turn into a system where one person's doing more than their fair share. Then you get into obliger rebellion. That's no fun. So this is a great system.
Yes. So thank you, Sammy, for that four tendency tip.
Yes. Yes. And we heard from another listener with a listener question. And as always, you can leave us a voicemail question at 774-277-9336, which is also 77-HAPPY-336, or drop us an email at podcast@GretchenRubin.com. And we have one from this listener.
Yeah, Gretchen, this question comes from Donna. She asks, I am a questioner and I am also a contract worker, which means I am frequently interviewing for new positions. I was wondering if you had any tips for how questioners can handle job interviews more gracefully. The traits that define me as a questioner make me a really good employee once I land a job in my chosen fields, project management and accounting. But I have the typical and somewhat ironic questioner trait of not liking to answer frivolous questions, which means I'm not all that great at job interviews. Any try this at home tips I can put to use? Thanks.
Well, as Donna mentions, this is an ironic and very common pattern among questioners, which is they get really, really annoyed if people are asking them questions. Often they don't mind teaching, but they don't like to be questioned. My husband shows this in a big way. He really refuses to answer questions. And so I think the first thing is it's helpful to realize that this is a pattern. And so you can, as Donna has done, and said, like, this isn't working for me. This isn't helpful in this situation. I'm going to mindfully tackle this problem instead of pretending like, you know, it's just coming up sort of ridiculous. Oh, these people are just idiots. It's one after another asking these questions. She's like, no, this is something I need to deal with, which I think is smart. And so this is something that questioners can do is, okay, a questioner is always like, why would I do this? That is what a questioner asks. Why should I do this? And if it's not efficient, if it doesn't make sense, if it's not a good use of time and energy, they will resist. But questioners always can find a second order of justification. They can say to themselves, I think this assignment is silly and a big waste of my time, but I am going to do this assignment and I'm going to do it well because it's important for me to earn my professor's respect because I want to have a recommendation for medical school. So you could say here, I find these questions trivial and frivolous and perhaps totally beside the point. And yet it's important for me to show this person that I'm a likable, cooperative, interested person who's willing to engage with others. And so I will answer these questions that I think are a big waste of time because it's important for me to make a certain impression on this person in order to get the kind of position that I want. And so to really focus in on not what is the justification for what's actually happening, but your justification for behaving a certain way in that circumstance.
Yeah. Can I say something as someone who does interview people quite often?
Yeah.
A lot of times when she says, you know, frivolous questions, a lot of times the questions are frivolous. It's really just to see, how do I communicate with this person? Mm-hmm. What is their demeanor? You know, do they speak well, et cetera. So the questions are frivolous, but they're not the answers to the questions aren't really what's being looked at.
Right.
You know, so if she doesn't think like if someone asks her some question that she thinks is idiotic, it's really not about the idiotic question.
Right.
It's about, how do you guys get along?
Well, so maybe that's a way is to think about, okay, so what do I want to communicate in this exchange? And to think like, I want to communicate that I am willing to listen to others. I want to communicate that I have a sense of humor. I want to communicate that I can stay focused on a subject. I want to communicate all the achievements that I accomplished in my last position. So again, it's like, whatever is the superficial under discussion, I'm using it for my own purposes. And again, for a questioner, it's like, it's efficient for me because I'm communicating the things I want to communicate. You know, you might come up with like 10 things that you want to convey. You know, I'm highly reliable, or, you know, I have a lot of friends, or whatever it would be. Yeah. Because you're right. It's not about, so what do you do in the summers? It's like, nobody really cares. They're just trying to make conversation to get a sense of who you are.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I think this is a really helpful thing for questioners to think about, because one thing that questioners often struggle with is that, or do they seem like they're constructive or helpful to others, or does their constant questioning or refusal to answer questions come across as sort of obstructive or disrespectful or curt or undermining? And so you need to think about, well, how can I manage my tendency in a way that it shows the strengths of the tendency, which it has powerful strengths, but not get tripped up by some of the limitations of the tendency? So that's a really great question that I think a lot of questioners struggle with.
Yeah. So Donna, good luck, and go nail those job interviews.
Yes.
Coming up, I give myself an 18 for 18 happiness demerit. But first, this break. This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, as we both are, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. Gretchen, we got Greenlight for Jack, and I love that it teaches him financial independence. Mm. He can earn money from us by doing chores and then getting money deposited into his Greenlight account. He can keep track of what he's spending.
Millions of parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/happier. That's greenlight.com/happier to try Greenlight for free. greenlight.com/happier. You know, Liz, it's important to me to be a treasure house of happy memories, but sometimes it's hard to frame something that you want to keep. Like, I have had pieces of children's art that I really wanted to frame, but it's kind of unconventionally sized and it's hard to do. But FrameBridge makes it easy to get anything framed at an affordable price. You can easily order online at framebridge.com, or you can visit one of their 20-plus retail stores. FrameBridge custom frames your pieces in their studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free.
Gretchen, I realized I didn't have a recent framed photo of you and me and mom and dad, and I really wanted one. So when we were in Kansas City and took a great picture, I uploaded it, sent it to FrameBridge, and now I have a beautiful framed photo of us. See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com.
Okay, Elizabeth, demerits and gold stars, and this is your turn for demerit.
Okay, Gretch, this isn't a big one, but it is bothering me. Mm. We did our list this year of 18 for 2018 things, you know, 18 things we want to do this year. And I actually did two lists, so I've really got a lot to do.
Yeah, you do. You set a high bar for yourself.
But one of the first things on my list when I started was to go to spin class, because I have really been wanting to try a spin class, one of those spin classes where they have like disco music pulsing lights and your name on a board. It looks so fun to me. And I know they're incredibly hard, but, you know, since I don't mind doing something badly, it's okay that they're hard, as we've discussed. But anyway, I haven't done it. And Sarah was going to do it with me. And we just have not done it. I thought we would knock it out like January 15th. Like I thought, Sarah and I are going to go this Saturday to a spin class. Like we've, you know, looked at different places that have them and talked about what kind we're going to do. And we just haven't done it. Now, yes, we've been doing the pilot, which is incredibly time consuming. But nonetheless, it's nagging at me that I have not done this spin class.
Well, you know, I think this is such an interesting example of something that is kind of surprising about 18 for 2018 or any kind of resolution like that, is the fact that often the fact that something's fun or actually appeals to you doesn't necessarily mean that you're more likely to get it done. Like you might think going just sort of on the surface of things, that if you looked at a list of 18 for 2018, you'd do the most fun or easiest things first and you would work your way through. Or maybe you'd start with the hardest things, or I don't know. But it's often the fact that something's, I think it's good to accept the fact that just because something is fun doesn't mean that you're more likely to get it done. You have to work on getting it done just as much if it were something as like making a dentist appointment. It's funny that way because you think it would be easier, but it doesn't seem to really make it easier.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, it's not going to happen in the next couple weeks, but maybe as soon as we finish shooting our pilot, we can get, it's probably a scheduling thing, right? If I put it on the schedule, then I'll do it.
Right. Maybe the first week off or something.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All right, Gretch, what is your gold star this week?
I know, I'm so excited about this gold star. So one of the things that's just sort of been nagging me in the back of my mind as, you know, you have these things is, so Jamie and I have like prescription medication that, you know, like we got it, like he had knee surgery and he got it and he never used it up, or it's like, you know, anyway, just pill bottles of stuff that we don't need or is expired. And I didn't know what to do with it. I mean, you're not supposed to flush it down your toilet. I didn't want to just put it in the trash. And so it just sat in our medicine cabinet, taking up extremely valuable real estate, because I was sort of in this paralysis of like, I don't know what to do with it. So then one day I go into this Duane Reade, and like in New York City at least, Duane Reade also is, which is owned by Walgreens. They are literally like one a block. If I'm like, yes, in a place and I'm like, there's not a drugstore within one block, I feel outraged. Like, where is the, you know? Yeah. So they're everywhere. But this is like one of the really good ones. It's one of the best Duane Reades. And I walk in to, like, I don't know, buy Q-tips or something. And they had this like a super reinforced trash can. And it was a secure bin for the disposal of prescription medication or expired over-the-counter medication. And it was a bin where if you put something in, you can't get it out. You know, the whole thing is locked up and it only goes one way. Yeah. And so I was so excited. And it was right by Inform, Elizabeth, where we do our weight training. Mm. And so I go there every week. So the next week I had gone through our medicine cabinet and I had a whole bag full of pill bottles. And it was so satisfying to be like, I'm doing exactly what I should be doing with this. I'm putting it here. I'm getting it off my shelves, off my conscience, and getting rid of it in a really responsible way. And so I was just so happy that Duane Reade had made it so easy by just like having this thing out in the middle of the store, so I could just, you know, cross it off my list. So
that's such a good feeling to have like a clean medicine cabinet.
I know.
Free of old pill bottles.
Yes. Oh, it was a great feeling. And to feel like I did it responsibly, because I was always like, what are you supposed to do with this stuff? You know, there's some things you're only supposed to dispose of in certain ways, and it's always very stressful.
Well, now they just need one of those same things for electronics, because there's so many things like you're not supposed to just throw away electronics, but I never know where they're supposed to go. So we just have like drawers of old electronics.
I think Best Buy does that. The Best Buy in my neighborhood does that. Yeah, they will accept certain kinds of electronics. Yes. Well, and that is it for this episode of Happier. Remember to try this at home. Write it down. You know it's true. Let us know if you tried it and if it worked for you.
Thank you to our producer, Odelia Rubin. Also, thank you to Kristen Meinzer and Andy Bowers of Panoply. Get in touch. Gretchen's on Instagram at Gretchen Rubin, and I'm at Liz Craft. Our email address is podcast@GretchenRubin.com.
If you like this show, we so appreciate it if you tell a friend or subscribe or rate or review the podcast. The resources for this week, I have 5 21-day projects, because I really do think in 21 days you can actually make steps to make yourself happier without spending a lot of time, energy, or money. So we'll put links to those. 4, there's a little bit of a charge, and then 1 is a freebie if you want to just check it out. There's 1 for strategies of habit change, know yourself better, declutter, quit yelling at your kids, cope with a difficult person, and then the free one is strengthening relationships. So I'll put the links to that in the show notes if you're curious to try that. Plus, I have to remind everybody about our mugs, Elizabeth. You're such a fan of mugs. We, of course, had to have mugs. So we have mugs for each tendency along with the motto for each tendency, which I love the motto so much. I will put a link in the show notes, or you can just go to the shop area on the GretchenRubin.com site.
Until next week, I'm Elizabeth Kraft.
And I'm Gretchen Rubin. Thanks for joining us. Onward and upward.